Hey, y'all. Welcome to Business Makers Podcast. Thank you for joining us. Business Makers is about equipping entrepreneurs, business leaders, and investors to build, grow, and establish businesses for the glory of God. Largely, we interview ordinary Christians striving for extraordinary results, and we want to encourage you to use your business to build culture, to build family, and to build the kingdom. Our conference, Prodigal America, is October 31st through November 2nd in Fort Worth, Texas, at Will Rogers Event Center, Coliseum, whatever they call it. Fantastic event center. Hope to see you guys there. We'll have a pre-business conference as part of that too. Those of it's on Thursday afternoon before the conference starts, and then we also do pastors' lunches, and we'll do a business lunch also as part of that. All those details will be coming up, but it's a full packed 3 days, 2.5 days, and hope to see you there. Also, for those who don't know, me and my wife have started a podcast on faith and fitness, or health and in our faith, and it's called Water Break. It's kind of rebooting my old Water Break show with me and my wife on it. And so it drops basically every Saturday. And so tune in. We'd love to have you guys join us on that. Our YouTube channel's youtube.com/waterbreaktv. And then, of course, we're on the app where we prefer for you to download us, Fight, Laugh, Feast app. Type it in your app store, download it, engage with us there, listen to us there. With me on Business Makers today is Christian Harris. Christian Harris is the owner of JCH Painting. And then he's also expanding that business, and we'll get into that here a little bit. So, yeah, a painting business. And some of you might be wondering, well, why are we interviewing an owner of a painting business? They're a dime and a dozen. You know, what's special, what's unique about the painting business, the business model, and so forth? Well, I think Christian is going to have some good thoughts to challenge you how to rethink some of these small business models that he's been working in for, I'm going to find out, most a long time. And Christian, thank you for coming on the show, man.
Hey, Gabe, thanks a lot.
Yeah.
Good to be with you.
Yeah, thank you. So we were just chatting offline, and you were kind of telling me that a church you were a part of in California, and it shut down during COVID. And obviously that is how that's how you wound up in Granbury, Texas, because now you're in Texas, the promised land, as you would know it. And so take me back there. You were involved in a church. You were in California, and it kind of, you know, fill in the dots, connect me how you got to Texas from there.
So actually, the COVID deal spun us out here to launch the mission that we're involved with. We came into Texas a while ago due to a rebellious child. So I had stepped down out of ministry. I was a part of a church plant in Sonoma, California, PCA. And I'd seen compromise throughout the years. We had four children.
Yeah.
And when one of mine began to show signs of rebellion, it was 911, and we pushed ourselves into her life.
Yeah.
After a few years, though, it was serious enough where I stepped down and started painting houses. That's how JCH Painting was birthed.
Okay.
We eventually moved to Texas and brought that business here. And then that's how, I guess I can encourage your listeners, if they ever wanted to start a business, some of the principles, some of the things that I've learned. What came out of the COVID was three things. Was not just JCH, because that was already started, but came a mission to be involved in more evangelism in our community. Mm-hmm. And then we started building greenhouses. So I have a little property here in Texas, and I'm actually wearing three hats and two full-time businesses. So yeah. I'm working 7 days a week, 6 days a week, and then get to preach on Sundays.
Okay. And so now you're in Granbury. And so you moved to Granbury in 2020?
No, actually, we came in earlier to Granbury. So we came in 2007 and settled in and developed the business here during that time, and slowly grew it from a bucket and a brush and a roll of 1.5 inch masking tape.
Mm-hmm. Why did you choose to move to Granbury from California.
So my sister married a Texan back in the day, and they were living in Weatherford. Mm-hmm. And my parents subsequently left Northern California when it was starting to get crazy. They had seen the signs on the wall. And so they moved here in 86. So they had enough discernment to go, wow, this is getting wild. My dad was retired airline pilot and all of the confines of regulations and taxations and things like that. And they moved here, and then we followed them in 2007.
Okay. And so since you moved there, you've built two businesses and started a church plant, or started a small church. What
pre-church. So it's kind of like the Isle of Titus, or Isle of Crete, where Paul tells Titus, he says, hey, I know there's some believers in there. We've seen the church expanded. Go into Crete and set in order what remains, you know, put and by appointing elders. So basically what happened is that here when COVID hit, our little church shut down, and we were watching services. We were involved in worship.
Okay, so your church, excuse me to interrupt you, sorry, but so your church in Granbury that you were at in 2020 is what shut down?
Right.
I was confused. Okay, great.
Put things on pause, so we were all watching it, like you and I are communicating now. Mm-hmm. And I'm sitting on this little love seat with my wife. We're standing up when we sing in, when we're supposed to, reading the word. We're sitting down, you know, we're involved in the worship. And you know, after one service and we clicked off on the computer, I looked at it and I go, there's something not right here. Well, what had happened is that when we got here, I started gobbling up as much information as I could, specifically practical theology. That steered me your way to Moscow, Idaho.
Okay.
And was discipled from Pastor Doug from afar.
Yeah.
Right. So I started ingesting. It started with Reforming Marriage, but I think the best business book on the market is Plotactivity. You know,
100%.
How to actually approach a challenge before you, or a goal before you, like starting a business.
Yeah.
And so when we turned it off, I looked at her and I said, there's something not right here. So we started doing an evangelistic Bible study. But because I'm a sovereignty of guy thing, I thought God is in control of this. He is sovereign over all things. Yeah. And my simple prayer before I actually went to the couch with my coffee and my Bible, my simple prayer before I put my feet on the ground was, Lord God, you are sovereign. You're going to open up doors and close doors every single day. There are going to be hundreds, thousands of opportunities that you'll put in before me. Mm-hmm. I want to see them. And so my simple prayer was, Lord, open up these doors. And so long story short, like I was telling you earlier, we have now 15 men on average. It ranges from 13 to 18. We just reached out into the community, and I'm just sharing Jesus wherever I have an opportunity, both in word and deed, right? Mm-hmm. Sharing the righteousness of Christ that's available to all who would believe, that our greatest need is to be right before a holy God. Mm-hmm. And that way of rightness, if you will, that way of salvation is through Christ alone. And so I'm preaching on the street corners. I'm involved in, like I said, you know, this two different businesses. One is JCH Painting, and one is what we're calling Anthem Farms. We have over 1,000 plants in the ground now, two fully functioning greenhouses.
Wow.
It's a concept that's being proven. We're not going to go to roadside stand for a couple years, but I'm learning how to grow in the impossible dirt of Texas soil, of how to grow heirloom, vine ripened heirloom tomatoes that we're trellising 10 feet high now. And boy, I mean, it's just, we're having so much fun. And I've got to say broadly, and I'll give it back to you broadly, so encouraged by optimistic eschatology about Jesus's ascension, seated at the right hand of the Father. He is king. We are not. He says, go and be fruitful and multiply and infuse yourself with creativity in every square inch of the cosmos.
Right.
And that's what we're doing.
Right. That's great. So you got into painting when you moved there back in 2007. And in my notes that I got from you, now your painting business is basically grossing about $1.2 million a year.
Yes, sir. Yes.
So is that total revenue? Total revenue $1.2 million?
Yeah, gross.
Yep. So how did you get? I mean, because Granbury's not a very big town either. Now there's a lot of houses around. The Metroplex is big, the rural Metroplex, whatever you want to call it. I mean, you're an hour and 20 minutes from Fort Worth, but you're kind of a rural town. So how did you get this small company into, up to 1.2 million?
So, when I first got here, came in pretty limping. So one of the challenges that I had was a difficult child, but that it was not her fault. It was obviously my fault. So I assumed responsibility for my daughter's rebellion, which then meant that I had to tend to my wife first and foremost. Mm-hmm. So there was a lot of ministry dynamics that were going on that I knew that I needed to take a deep breath and to allow God begin to sort out the pieces. Uh-huh. So when we first came here, I thought I was going to be a coach and get my degree and teach at the local middle school.
Okay.
But what happened is that I had experience in painting when we stepped down from ministry. It has a learning curve, but it's an easy craft, if you will, a skill set to learn. Mm-hmm. There are many tricks of the trades and things like that, but within a year or two, you can actually become pretty proficient. But we stepped into it. I decided to go that route of moving into business as it allowed me to focus on the other things in my family. And mm-hmm. so what happened is that I started reading everything. I knew I needed education. I knew coming out of ministry, even though I had a business degree, I knew I needed to understand the territory. I needed to understand the market. I needed to understand economics and finance and forecasting and things like that, even at a little business, even on a little thing where you're just starting to paint. So for the first few years, it was probably close to 30,000 gross for me, barely making it. I mean, it was just operating out of my truck. But during that time, a few mentors came into my life one of them was this guy on the radio named Dave Ramsey.
Yeah.
And what Dave Ramsey did was he was like a baseball bat up the side of my head. And he said, listen, he said, it's going to be difficult, but if you work hard at it, we often underestimate what we can do in 5 years. We overestimate what we can do in a year. So just stay focused, get out of debt and pay cash for everything, which means that cash flow of the last 16 years, since we're a debt-free company, cash flow has been the biggest challenge in our growth phases. But we went from 300,000 gross for the first few years. Then by year five, when I finally turned the corner and I realized we had an established business, we decided to go brick and mortar. So instead of just operating by cell phone out of the truck, we bought this office that is I'm a part of right now.
Right.
Very affordable back then, but we started putting into play just a few principles that are key. Mm-hmm. And we slowly started grow. We got to 500,000, we got to 700,000. In the last 4+ years, we're over 1 million. We're averaging 1.2 gross because our system is totally in place now, and we can't squeeze anything more out of our system unless we move out of Granbury.
Yeah.
Granbury's small. Mm-hmm. And like you pointed out in the question, the challenges were huge. And so I realized five things. Number one, I needed to be humble.
Mm-hmm.
So I needed to realize that I'm a part of the problem of everything that I face. And so every morning when I would get up to shave or whatever, I would just look in the mirror and go, dude, in right relationship with God, and God is sovereign. Mm-hmm. But boy, you have to take ownership of every little facet of your life. And your ministry of work, your family. And so whenever there was a bump in the road, it was easy not to lose my temper because I had a right view of God and his control of all things. And so I go, okay, Lord, what do you want to teach me? How can we grow from this? And so that was number one, humility. Number two is, like I said, was always being a student. I had to grab books. So God put me on the couch during that time. And so I've been on part of a Bible reading plan. So I read through the Bible now every year, but, but in that I had to grab and make room for books. Like I had mentioned to you, not only for ministry, for personal growth, spiritual growth, but also for business. So, Bonson, his latest thing was just his latest one on work, the one that he just put out. I'm a horrible at titles. Mm-hmm.
Full time.
Yeah, full time. Yeah. I mean, I'm grabbing everything. Anything that's points us to success or the right kind of success, I want to be involved in. Mm-hmm. So always be learning. It was often said when I would go into the paint stores back in the day, they would say, you know what makes you successful is that you're always curious. You're not just taking one fact about something or learning one thing about one particular product and then just settling in on that. You're always asking, well, what's new, what's evolving, what's developing. So I think you always have to be in school, if you will. Mm-hmm. Thirdly, you have to work your tail off. I mean, if you were to be honest with me, I'm probably average 10 to 12 hours a day within the painting business. And there's that European or biblical work ethic that we've lost that we need to own. Man of the House, I think it was C.R. Wiley's a book that I read. You have to take ownership of your life, and you have to realize that it requires hard work, and we have to be people that produce. We're no longer just consumers. We don't work hard at a particular job and then just go buy a lot of stuff.
Right.
We actually need to be taking the fact that we've been created in the image of God and actually creating something for His glory. We are His workmanship, created in Christ Jesus for good works.
Right.
And to be putting Him on display, and that requires hard work. I mean, so early on, we had to kill our TV. We don't have a TV in the house. We had to stop it. We had to jettison everything. We had to evaluate everything. What is a distraction? You know, what is moving us from achieving our goals, which tied into that one is not only working your tail off, but focus and keeping your eyes on what you want to do. And then plotting, like we mentioned earlier, just from productivity of just taking baby steps. And it doesn't look like I've gone anywhere, you know, in one day. You would say, if you came to me and say, Christian, have you even moved off the dime? I would say, yes, Gabe, I have a half an inch. But knowing that you know what I know, you'd be saying, good job, bro. You would say, keep going. And in a week, you'd come in and you'd go, dude, you're a foot forward. I go, I'm there, you know. And in a half a year, you'd be going, you're in the other room, or you're outside, or you're whatever. So I think you have to stay focused. And then finally, I just think, so five would be the golden rule. I think the Jesus principle. Uh-huh. So within our business, here's how it breaks itself down. We can talk about the components, cost of goods sold, P&L statements, whatever you want to do. Mm-hmm. But I learned this early on. I said, okay, I'm a Christian. Again, hoping in God, trusting in Him. I left the contractual environment of California, and I came here to an environment that I developed of a handshake. So we go in, I'll bid a job, I'll present the proposal or the bid, and then there's no hard selling. What I do is I present Christ when I meet people, not preaching the gospel, not being evangelistic, though that happens. It's just, I'm there to love on people, to unconditionally, whether they're brothers in Christ or not, I'm going to love you in my interaction with you.
Yeah.
And I'm going to warm you up to the fact that whether I say it or not, I'm a Christian. I'm going to treat you as I would want to be treated. Mm-hmm. And then when that proposal is submitted, and we can talk about closing rates and all that, whatever you want to go, then it gets back to me. Yes, we'd like for you to work for us. And already it's been stated, it's just a handshake.
Yeah.
The next step is we put you on the production calendar that we have on the wall. Actually, we have a few production calendars. And you're then slotted in, and we show up and we do the work. And this has been our policy since day one. We do the work for you, and you only pay us when you're satisfied.
Okay.
We've had in 17 years, we've had six people not pay.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Wow.
The percentage is good. The percentage is good. Mm-hmm. And then all the pressure's on us. So we're there to perform. And so we operate as if we need to do well on this job or we're going to die. And all of this, my guys know. So the 20 employees that I have, they know the way we do things. They know that we step on and we have to earn that check. right? Mm-hmm. And so then we do that, we do it, and we tidy everything up and we clean, and we put everything back together, and more often than not, blow our customers out of the water. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for returning my call. Thank you for showing up on time, which we do. Thank you for not smelling like smoke. You know, even though I got two guys that smoke, they cannot smell like smoke. And you put my house, you cleaned it nicer than when you came in and found it. And so those are some of the things. I know it's a mouthful. I'll give it back to you.
Yeah. So how do you, I mean, we're kind of in this economy where labor is hard to find. Right. How are you able to maintain an employee base of 20 people? That's a lot.
Right. So if you were to go around to the local businesses here in Granbury and you were to ask them, what is your biggest challenge? They would say the exact same thing, but they would have said it 15 years ago, 10 years ago, 5 years ago. It's hard to find good help. So the way that I look at it, first off, I based on experience, I never hire anybody experienced in painting. Zero. You're going to get a Zippo from me if you tell me that you have 20 years painting experience.
Wow.
I want to train my guys. Okay. Yeah. Now, there are some exceptions, and that's only if there's a personal testimony of a guy that works for me.
Uh-huh.
So I realized early on that turnover is deadly for my company. If you train a guy how to paint, you either are training him to, be your competition.
Right.
Whatever. I mean, you're filling the blank.
Yeah.
So I go, I got to keep these guys. So early on, I pay, regardless of me, I'm at the very bottom. I don't take my thing off the top. And that's another way that really strikes fear in me and strikes desire. I don't know if I'm like you or not, but I know you're athletic. I was athletic too into college. And so I was the 6'2 guy. Basketball was my sport.
Yeah.
And I grew up with not the best athletic ability. So I needed to work hard. I was the guy that threw up on the sidelines. I was the guy that never really quite made it, but was always on the team because of the effort on the field. Yep. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so that translated into the work environment. So going back to what you just asked. So I realized, listen, I've got to take full ownership of this thing and there's no easy way out. And the only way that I could keep guys, with us is paying them top wage so that they would look around, because largely our crew is Hispanic. Okay. I just lay it out there. And all they do is talk and text to one another. Who's paying what? Yep. Everybody's connected. There are no surprises. They know exactly who's paying what.
Right.
And I shot everything up and blew my competition away so that these are going. Now the temptation is for them to think, oh wow, you must be wealthy. But then you have to let them into your life enough to say, no, I'm doing this because I love you. I love God. And I want to start, you know, really, really. So, so that starts it. And then you take a guy and within one day, within a half a day, if I was on site, certainly within 2 days, I can tell whether a guy is qualified to be a part of what we're doing.
Right.
And so I'm looking for just two things in an interview. I'll go through it and I know, and I smoke out two things. Number one, will you show up early every day out of the interview? And do you have a passion to learn?
Yep.
Are you humble enough and say, dude, I just want to learn. Mm-hmm. I just want to be good at something. And that's how my interviews go. It's almost a discipleship kind of thing. So I take these young guys and then I say, I promise you, you start at $15 an hour, but I promise you within 1 year, you'll be at 17 if you follow our model.
Yep.
I promise you within 3 years, you'll be in our top tier for prep is $20 an hour. And then our top tier for right now for lead guys is $28 an hour.
Yeah.
So you're going to move in that and everything. And they all talk about who makes what. So you might as well just lay it out there. I don't
care. Yeah. Right.
I'm going to tell you exactly how much you're going to get.
Uh-huh.
I guarantee you, you focus within months, you'll get your first raise.
Yeah.
So for me, it's all I want to protect my workforce. And so guys are fired within 2 days. So it's easy. And my guys know the system. And all I have to do is look at them and go, how'd they do? Axed.
Yeah. Right.
Or if my lead guy goes, yeah, you know what? There's some potential there. Good. And I let my lead guys know, listen, I'm not going to micromanage you. You're going to be running your own business. So you need to hire for you. I'm going to be giving bodies to you, and you evaluate them as to what you can make them into be. Because my training with my first five lead guys, when we actually got to five crews, they were all guys that I worked with when I was painting. So that set the legacy. By year, when I dropped out of painting, I think of 5 years, I put down the brush. Then they had a trajectory, and you have to do minor course corrections. But if you set that trajectory early on, you don't have to tweak with it much, because you built into the guys exactly what it is you'd like them to do, what our standards are, and the fact nobody likes to be micromanaged. Nobody likes to be yelled at. And so I release them. You hire the best guys. You train them up, and then you release them. They're not going to see me. I hardly ever go to job sites anymore. Because they know the standards. They know exactly what we're going to do. I'll show up on job sites when there's problems, and we own it. I'm never angry when my guys break something. I'm never angry when our guys mismatch something. I look at it as my responsibility. I come in and say, listen, it's cool. Don't worry about it. Now, if you keep breaking stuff, there might be some ramifications for that. But listen, we are here, and we're going to, you know, so, I mean, we can talk a lot, but that's how we got our workforce. And so I would 86 that thought in that question that you gave. I would say when I hear people, and I don't engage people or argue with people, but when I go to local businesses here in Granbury and they say, man, it's really hard to find people. I mean, I just think in my mind, that's not the right perspective to take.
So. Now, you when you were messaging with my assistant about this, you said you built a $1.2 million business, and your number one expense was 1.5-inch masking tape. Are you how much are you spending on masking tape?
So I go in and give talks to the local schools on entrepreneurship and to the Forward Training Center that we have in town. And I walk in with a bucket, a brush, and a roll of 1.5-inch masking tape. And I hold up this masking tape and I said, you want to be a millionaire? You want to have $1 million gross company? I say, this is your key to success, an 1.5-inch roll of masking tape. And they're like, what? You know, and then I develop the talk from there. But our number one expense based on the quality of work that we do is prepping. And the number one asset for prepping is tape. And the number one tape that we use for speed is 1.5-inch, not inch. You have to take too much time with an inch, not 2-inch. That's waste. It's 1.5-inch. And so when you look at our stats, when you break down on an Excel spreadsheet and you see exactly how much we spend on products, plastic, paper, a primer, paint, our number one expense every single year is 1.5-inch masking tape, which then early on I realized, because it was under a dollar when we first came here in 2007. It's now over $3 a roll. Now with all the COVID and the jackups and Kelly Moore going out and all the other businesses here trying to, you know, rape and pillage the local painter. So what we've done is I said, okay, I got to play hardball. So if this is my number one expense, I've got to lower the cost of goods sold, right? If I'm spending that, I can't just go, what's $2, right? No, we're using a lot of this. So I started playing the suppliers off one another, and I got PPG to just blister Sherwin-Williams, just for example, for this. And it's almost, so I realized how much they're actually making it for, but we're just barely over a dollar per 1.5-inch roll right now because we buy in bulk. So now I've got in the next room, I've got a warehouse, small warehouse. And so we buy in bulk, 0% financing, paid out 6 months. And so we dramatically lower our cost of goods sold. And that's a good question.
That's interesting. So you got your masking expense from $3 a roll down to over a little over a dollar a roll because you're buying in bulk.
$1.21
stuff like that.
To let you know, $1.21.
Wow, that's really good. Why is, you know, a business like painting so strategic in a small town?
And can I just say something? This is not to just blow you up or whatever. Dude, You have grown so much. I've watched you since the inception. Gabe.
Thank you, sir.
You are insightful. You ask great questions. You are growing. God, I'm just so encouraged, man. I wish you were my friend. Okay. So I would say that going back to the theology, I mean, if anybody's followed Cross Politics or followed your stuff or the interviews, like I've already mentioned it, we have been called to work. We've been called to create. Mm-hmm. I believe we've been called to be more than just a number. Mm-hmm. So, or a paycheck. Mm-hmm. So when I grew up, my dad came to Ellis Island in 1935, traveled across the United States in a Ford. We settled in Santa Cruz, California. And the only thing I remember growing up in the 60s is everybody in our neighborhood had a workshop. They had the garage. They either had a workshop in the garage or they had workshops that were not attached to the house. Mm-hmm. And I'm going somewhere. I'm going to answer the question.
Yeah.
So, and I remember next door neighbors, elderly, making cakes from scratch, you know, putting things together for, you know, and delivering a homemade cake or homemade cookies, not out of a box or this or that. Mm-hmm. And I'm ancient, so I remember when the first McDonald's came into town. The point is that we used to use our hands. We used to create. We used to be productive, right? And we've lost that. We've lost that probably due to the shallowness of the church, the lack of an understanding of the theology of work, our local educational institutions that are just a waste of time. No, we ought to bring the crafts. We ought to bring the trades back into the school with a force. Yeah. And if the public school doesn't do it, which obviously I'm not that anymore, but man, if you're starting classical education, sure, fill up the mind, but make sure that right next to it is a huge warehouse where you have lathes and you have acetylene torches and you have cutters and you have drafters and machines, and you're taking these children and these young men and you're putting them into the crafts. That's why I think it's important. We've given up all of that. If you were to go to all of the trades except for those that were licensed, and even that's being compromised now.
Yeah.
So Texas is a right to work state. So there are no regulations like California. And right. there's a lot of I guess you would say electrician licenses or plumber's licenses that are being used in a lot of different ways where these master electricians or master plumbers are not even on site anymore. So right. The point I'm making is that we have to go back, and like you mentioned in the past, you can make a good living out of being a painter. You right. can have a good reputation. They're the company in town that makes my stuff right or makes right. things last or mm-hmm. or plumber. Six figures
yeah.
being a plumber or electrician and that. So I would say it's super mm-hmm. important to get the gospel back into the community and take ownership of being creative in the trades and things like that to make the name of Christ known. Two go hand in hand.
Yeah. And now you've also you've expanded your painting side into like just home services, maintenance yes. and so forth. Why
hasn't launched?
How does that, it hasn't launched yet? Or my question is, you know, why is that a natural extension of what you're doing? And
because, I don't want to lie. I don't want to be dramatic or overstate it. Every week I'm in home. Let's just say we have 5 crews. We're in 7 homes a week. Mm-hmm. Every single week, somebody comes to me and says, do you know somebody that can do X, Y, and Z?
Yeah.
Or while you're here, can you help me with X, Y, or Z? In fact, I think in the model that we're developing that could easily be franchised, and that's another thought too. I think a home services business needs to be established in every city. Mm-hmm. Christian-based, gospel-fueled men and women actually being raised up to meet the needs of the local community.
Yeah.
The elderly in our town are asking. Largely, they've been abandoned. Their kids are in out. You know, they're in other states. They're in
big cities.
Big cities, whatever. And they can't get to help their mom or dad out. And they just say, hey, can you change this? Can you do this while you're here? Can you help me move this out of the garage? And so it just seemed a natural pivot for us to say, okay, well, we're already involved in the painting side of things, and our reputation is stellar because people are asking me, I don't care what it costs. Can you do this? Can you take and fix my door? I've got a hinge that's busted. You know, I mean, you just begin to make the list. So that's in play right now. So, yeah.
And so you're kind of in this lake town because Granbury's really kind of built around a lake.
Yep.
And so you have a lot of opportunity, and you're already painting at the house, and then they ask you, and you're able to give them more products and services, basically.
It's a natural segue. That makes sense. Into that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And can I mention one thing too? Because and maybe I'll send you some pictures. I want to tell you what we're doing with our farm, because eventually we're doing non-certified organic produce.
Yeah.
And so everybody has side hustles. This is like a major side hustle for me too. And I got to watch. I told my wife I'm never retiring. So she's all good with it. She's involved. She's our office manager. She sits right over there.
Okay.
But I'll send you some pictures that will be really encouraging, I think, to
whoever
might listen to this and click on it. And lastly, too, I want to tell you this, make sure before I forget, I'm available for a conference call. I'm available for a call. I'm available if you want to come in for lunch, show you around. I would take anybody through what we do and how we do it. And it might only take, an hour or 2 hours or whatever, but I'm available, Gabe. So I see that lacking in the body of Christ. A lot of successful men, they're just not available.
Yeah. What? And people can reach out to you through your website.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah.
JCHpainting.com. Is that what it is?
We used to have that. It's now call JCH because we're going to pivot here shortly.
Yeah. Call JCH. Last question here. What does JCH stand for?
John Christian Harris. I know it wasn't very creative.
Yeah.
It was back in the day, man.
I was wondering because your name is Christian Harris. At least that's the what my assistant gave me was Christian Harris.
Yeah.
And so I was like, okay, I see C and H, but what's the J?
My dad's a Brit. Yeah. And so all the four boys all go by their middle name.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Okay. Well, hey, I was going to call you John, but hey, Christian, thank you so much for coming on Business Makers Podcast, and appreciate your time with us.
Hey, thanks a lot, Gabe, and we'll see you when you come to Texas.
Yeah, we'll be coming. You going to come to our Prodigal America conference?
Yes, we were at the ARC too, but I didn't want to bother you.
Oh, nice. That was such a fun conference. I would say the ARC encounter, I think the content's been really good at the conferences, but the ARC encounter, there's just something unique about the content at the ARC encounter that I thought was, it just really stretched. Yeah, it really stretched me really good. So, hey man, we'll see you in Prodigal America in Fort Worth.
All right.
Sounds good. Blessings. Thank you everybody for tuning in. Make sure you download the app, Fight Laugh Feast, in your app store, or type in Cross Baltic in your app store. And we hope to see you guys in Fort Worth, Texas in October. Thank you for tuning in, and we'll catch you next week.